She's been in detention for over 1 year now. When I met with her about a month ago, she struck me as an extremely sad and disturbed child. She's been diagnosed as suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, although an alternative diagnosis of major depression and anxiety has been indicated as appropriate.
That, by the way, is the voice of Katie Robinson, who's a solicitor with Maurice Blackburn. And she's talking about a six-year-old asylum seeker. We don't know that asylum seeker's name, except they're referred to as AS. And AS is at the centre of a class action on behalf of asylum seekers detained on Christmas Island that is being brought by Maurice Blackburn. The case accuses the government of a range of things. It accuses the Immigration Minister of breaching his duty of care by failing to provide adequate health care to asylum seekers and not enrolling children in school. And you've heard some of the symptoms and the concerns there. What's interesting about this is who's bringing the litigation. Sister Bridget Arthur is AS's litigation guardian. She joins me now. Sister, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Waleed.
What is a litigation guardian?
Litigation guardian, I suppose there are technical sorts of explanations of it, but as I understand it, it's a person who stands for someone who's got a disability or a child or a young person as a party to a legal proceeding.
Right, now, I understand in this case, AS actually has parents. So why are you doing this instead of them?
Because I think every child, I understand, you would know more than me, but I understand that each child in Australia has to have a litigation guardian.
But if they have parents, why can't the parents act as a guardian?
Well, in this case, I think the parents are quite traumatised, and obviously the whole of the Australian legal system is outside their experience. So in these cases, as I understand it, litigation guardians are always appointed.
Have you met the parents?
No, I haven't had a chance to do that because they're on Christmas Island.
So do they have any involvement in this case at all? Are they consenting to the bringing of the case, for example?
They have consented, yes.
Right. So it ends up being you with the lawyers effectively running this, I imagine, on your own. Do you really need AS's involvement?
Well, AS is 6 years of age, so she's a small child. So.
Right, okay. So AS obviously can't get involved beyond what a six-year-old could. The parents don't seem involved. They're on Christmas Island. So this is all kind of happening without the kids there. It seems, or without the family being involved, really. It seems an unusual sort of process. How common is it in your, like, have you done this a lot?
I've done it a few times before. And in this case, I think I see it as part of our whole communal responsibility, really. This is outside legal stuff a bit, but a communal responsibility we've got for people who come seeking protection here. Australia's got a duty of care to anyone who arrives here asking for help, and we've, in my view, we've breached our obligations as a decent society by our policy of indefinite and long-term detention, the sorts of things that we've done to this small child and to many, many others.
So I imagine this is your motivation for doing it. There might be a cynical view, and I'm interested in getting your response to this view, that it becomes more newsworthy when someone like you is in this role. Does that factor into this at all?
Well, it certainly doesn't for me. I'm an Australian citizen like everybody else. I've got a lot of experience of visiting and walking with people who are in detention. I've been doing this for about 14 years. And I've done it week in, week out. So I think that I can call on that experience of watching adults and families and kids in detention and watching what happens to them. So I think I'm in a reasonably good position to understand the situation for this small child.
And so what sort of role do you play in the actual legal proceedings?
I am there to make certain that the interests and the needs of the child are kept to the fore and in any part of the whole process.
Now, you've been visiting detention centres for 12 to 13 years, so you've clearly seen a lot of detention centres. You haven't, however, I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, not been to Christmas Island, and certainly not as far as it affects AS.
No, I haven't been to Christmas Island, but there's a body, a substantial body of research and writing and so on that shows that the very process of locking up people results in pretty similar sorts of things across the board. I noticed that for all detainees, the sort of there's a kind of thing that happens that's quite similar in some ways. You know, people go from being very buoyant and very optimistic and having great hope. They believe that they're going to get a fair deal and that they will get protection. And then as the months go on, you know, their whole emotional and mental approach changes. And that seems very typical for people who are detained. It can almost be charted, I think.
Now, what exactly do you hope to achieve by this in a political sense? I know you're not a lawyer, but do you believe if you were to succeed with this, that ultimately this would be the end of the detention regime as it currently operates, or that children in detention would be treated in a remarkably different way?
Well, I haven't got a crystal ball to know how much of an effect this will have, but I certainly hope that we'll raise awareness of what Australia is doing to people who come asking our help. You know, this afternoon I sat with a family who are just suffering so obviously. A mother's got cancer, barely left a room for 5 months. And, you know, I hope that for families like that, that we will never keep them in, if we can make changes to policy, that we won't keep people like that in detention. They've been in detention for over a year, that particular little group. And it's awful to watch the suffering that people are through. So I hope that we will raise awareness of what we're doing to people. And I also think that people who suffer like this on our watch deserve compensation. Money never makes up for suffering, but it's an indication of our attempt to assist in a healing process. So those two things I hope will come out of this case.
Just before I let you go, I'm just interested in your experience over 12 to 13 years of watching immigration detention and your responses to it. Was there anything that sticks out in your mind as something you saw that really is what got you energised as an activist in this area?
Yes, I think sitting with people, and this wouldn't have been only one person, but I can remember one person in particular saying, I'm between earth and sky. And then later in the conversation, he said three things. I'm between earth and sky, and then later on I'm between life and death, and then later on I seem to be a person with a body and no heart. And I came out of talking to him and actually wrote those things down because he was just so obviously traumatised, and I knew the whole story of that man because I'd been seeing him for some time, and I couldn't help thinking we are really re-traumatising somebody who's been through terrific trauma. He had suffered terrific trauma. Most of his family had been killed, and including his wife and children. And I thought, sitting there listening to him, how can we do this to somebody who's been through so much before? I mean, that's just one instance, and that's been replicated many, many times.
It's a very interesting development, interesting case to observe. Sister Bridget Arthur, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Willie.
AS's litigation guardian, AS being a child whose name we don't know beyond those two letters.